May it please the Court. My name is Jeff Pitzer. I'm here on behalf of the appellant Dwayne Straub, seeking relief in this court because my client, Mr. Straub, at the district court level, was denied his right to a fair trial for two reasons. Number one, the trial court failed to hold an evidentiary hearing in order to, that would have, I submit, demonstrated that failing to grant immunity, use immunity, to key defense witness Michael Bauman distorted the fact-finding process.
So, I had some sympathy with the claim. We speak only for ourselves. We don't consult beforehand. I had some sympathy with the claim because so many government witnesses got immunity. Seemed like anybody they could use.
Correct.
Could testify, and it was free. But you had a witness you couldn't. However, your proffer, it didn't sound to me like it would matter much. All he'd say, the two of them went in and ripped off another dope dealer. Dope dealer wound up dead. And each one says the other one was the shooter. I couldn't see where the immunized testimony mattered because, first of all, the guy in the bar didn't overhear your prospective witness say he shot that particular dope dealer, just that he shot a man.
Right. Right.
In the milieu that they were in, I don't know if that implies the same man. And the second thing is, so what if he was the shooter instead of the other guy being the shooter? The aiders and abettors, co-conspirators, what does it matter?
Well, to respond to both questions, the problem was that the witness, Michael Bauman, had been in a club on some night in the winter of 2003. The shooting of Robert Garrett took place on February 8th of 2003, so in the winter of 2003. Michael Bauman was in a club, and he testified, that, or the proffer indicates that he ran into David Adams. Now, David Adams was the key witness on the government's case on counts 3 and 4. He was the only person who put Mr. Straub at the scene, and he put the gun in Mr. Straub's hand. So he is the key witness. And this, Michael Bauman said he saw Mr. Adams, that night, and Mr. Adams was glum and sullen. And when asked what was the matter, he said, "I just shot a man." Now, the trial court judge said, well, he could have shot anybody. But there wasn't any evidence that he shot anybody else. And I think that that fact, that he would say that the government's key witness admitted to shooting someone in the same time frame.
That he shot the dope dealer they were stealing the inventory from, other than that it was a man and it was in the same season?
No direct evidence. But in addition to, though, Mr. Bauman would have corroborated the testimony of Mr. Straub's father, who testified that late that night of the shooting, David Adams came to his house, and he was crying and overwrought. And so it's consistent with the testimony that Mr. Bauman would have given, that there was this particular night in the winter of 2003 when Mr. Adams came into the club, and he was overwrought.
Why does it matter? How does it help Straub any?
Because
the jury does believe that the other fellow was the shooter.
Well, if the jury disbelieved David Adams, and David Adams, even the government contends, was a woefully incredible witness, according to the government's own brief, Mr. Adams was incredible for about 8 reasons. He admitted that he was a marijuana dealer. He used drugs. He engaged in home invasion robberies. He was charged in another robbery at gunpoint. He was a gang member. He threatened to beat up his own grandmother, and he lied to the police in the past, he admitted, and he also acknowledged that he expected to receive benefits for his testimony in this case. And that's the I'm reading from the government's brief at pages 16 and 17. And the reason it would have mattered is because Mr. Bauman, had he been allowed to testify, that might have been the tipping point such that the jury would have concluded to disregard Mr. Adams' testimony altogether. And essentially, if they did that, they might have thought that...
The jury have convicted Straub while disregarding Adams' testimony from the get-go?
No. I submit that the jury could not have done that.
I thought Straub kind of convicted himself with his remarks by saying, "You'll never find my stash because I've got it so spread out," that sort of thing.
Well, I think there was, that's why we think that the counts should have been severed. There was a methamphetamine conspiracy, and then there was an attempted robbery to steal marijuana from Mr. Garrett.
The severance matter. My thought on Adams was nobody would believe him from the get-go, so what did it matter that you had one more reason?
Fair enough, and that's a very good question. I think in the answer, you have to go to the jury instructions to find the answer to that question, because when the judge went to instruct the jury, he came to counts 3 and 4, and he said, I'm going to skip over count 3. He reversed the order, and he said, I'm going to instruct you on count 4 first. And this is consistent with the judge's earlier comments back when they argued the motion to sever, that he felt that counts 3 and 4 were only related to the meth conspiracy incidentally. He felt that they were sort of their own independent crime. And so when he got to counts 3 and 4 in the instructions, he switched the order and he started off on count 4. And if you read it, I'm referring to excerpt of record page 190. And if you read that, he instructs count 4 and he does not instruct it as a conspiracy count. He says that you have to find first that the defendant intended to take or cause someone else to take the marijuana. Second, that the defendant further intended that the marijuana would be distributed. And third, that the defendant himself knowingly and willfully did something or cause someone else to do something that was a substantial step toward the actual commission of the crime. And I'm referring now to...
If the jury had to find four in order to convict on three...
Right.
That's the instruction that's given on three, is that finding on four is a predicate to finding
exactly.
on three. So the jury is going to find that Mr. Strobe went to Garrett's house. So the jury has found that he's in Garrett's house. Now... Three then only seems to focus, and the question of Mr. Bauman's testimony only seems to focus on who's got the gun. But in order to convict of three, it doesn't require that Mr. Strobe have the gun. It only requires that he be there at a time when Garrett was shot.
Well, perhaps, but
having found on four, then what's the problem on three?
Well, on four, I think that they have to find that he was there. And, in fact, the government argued that he was the shooter. That was the government's theory of the case. And so the jury easily could have understood that they needed to find he was the shooter.
Well, but that's not what the instruction says.
Correct.
Talking about speculating about what the jury might have thought and been confused, it seems a little...
Well, fair enough. I understand. It could have probably convicted either way, but the reality is that they had to find guilt on count four. And if they didn't, they couldn't convict on count three. And the fact is that Mr. Bauman had been allowed to testify, and he had told the jury, and they had believed him, and they had concluded that Mr. Adams was the actual shooter, based on, when added to all of the other impeachment of Mr. Adams, they might have concluded that they discredited his testimony altogether. And concluded
but Adams' testimony places both of them, that it incriminates himself, but it also incriminates Strobe. Do we have
right.
other evidence that Strobe was there?
I think it's
you can ask the government that, so you may as well get a first shot.
Yeah, I don't believe there's anything but David Adams that puts him at the scene. The victim could not identify his shooter. There was some testimony that there was his car was there, but when the actual owner of that car testified, he said no. I mean, the man who saw that car said and showed a picture was shown a picture of Mr. Schraub's car. He said no, that's not the car I saw.
Counsel, since your time is running out, before you sit down, suppose we were to agree with you and remand, what is the district court supposed to do? What are you asking for?
We're asking for an evidentiary hearing, that the district court hold an evidentiary hearing to determine whether or not excluding Mr. Bauman distorted the fact-finding process, whether the jury got a fair picture of the facts without hearing from Mr. Bauman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you were to get an evidentiary hearing and we found that there was a distortion of the facts, does the whole case have to go back or only counts 3 and 4 or just count 3?
Well, I think counts 3 and 4 for sure, and I think because Mr. Adams testified to other things beyond counts 3 and 4, arguably the whole case should be retried. And we ask that it would be retried in two separate trials based on the prejudice that flowed from the severance of the joinder of these two cases. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Kelly Zusman appearing on behalf of the United States. I think the first thing that I want to point out is that the current request for an evidentiary hearing was never raised before the district court. The entire colloquy between Judge Panner, the prosecutor, and defense counsel is at ER 149 to 151. That's where you will see his proffer on what he claims Mr. Bauman would have said and where you see Judge Panner's response. None of this was raised pre-trial. It came up in the middle of trial, and I can tell you as a practical matter that it would have been impossible to have given Mr. Bauman immunity in the midst of this trial. All requests for immunity have to be referred to the Department of Justice, and it takes a matter of weeks.
Counsel, I was disturbed by all the immunity. And a whole lot of people get to commit crimes and go free as long as they help with the testimony in this case, and more narrowly, as long as they help with the prosecution side of the testimony in this case.
And on that point, Your Honor, I think I need to provide some clarification. And that is that there were a lot of witnesses called in this case. There were only three witnesses who were actually given immunity. David Adams was only given partial immunity. He was not given immunity for any crimes of violence, and in fact was prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced before Judge Mossman in May of last year for intimidating a witness. So in terms of the skewed evidentiary burden,
it simply wasn't there. Who were the others that were given immunity?
Another one was Lisa Clark. She was one of the drug runners, and I believe the third was Anita Weiland, who was another drug runner.
I have down that Corey Smith was given use immunity. Is that not right?
He did not testify. There were another November witnesses who were given deals, who were given plea agreements, who were given reduced sentences, but immunity was only given to three, and David Adams was only given immunity for drug crimes, not crimes of violence.
Did the others get their immunity anyway, even though they didn't testify, or was it just use immunity for their testimony?
If it was, it was informal. There were no further prosecutions. So in terms of the skewed here, it simply wasn't present. Another thing that I'd like to point out in terms
of... What did you have to put Straub at the scene other than Adams?
Sure. There were two witnesses who also put him at the scene. They were not eyewitnesses. The third person that Adams testified was present, who he referred to as Stinky and sometimes referred to as Spooky. Nobody could find him at the time of trial. But the two other witnesses that put Straub at the scene, one was Detective Hoskins. And Detective Hoskins testified that he was the one supervising Joseph Mockley, who was a confidential informant in this case. 1 week prior to the shooting of Mr. Garrett and the incident which forms the basis for counts 3 and 4, Detective Hoskins is listening in on a phone call between Mockley and the defendant, where the defendant describes precisely what he's going to do. He's going to rob a guy who's got a marijuana grow in his basement. He says it's about 400 plants. He says the guy lives in Portland, and he's taken a gun with him. And that's at ER, I believe it's 130 to 137. The other witness who put Straub at the scene is Misty Dawn Day. Now, she testifies, again, approximately a week before this event takes place, that she is at the apartment of Sherry Wilson. Now, Sherry Wilson is the ex-girlfriend of Mr. Garrett, and she doesn't like Mr. Garrett. At Sherry Wilson's apartment, the defendant, Adams, and Sherry Wilson plan the home invasion robbery of Mr. Garrett. Sherry Wilson even draws them a picture of the house. She tells them, here's where you go in. Here's where the marijuana grow is. Go get him.
I assume she skated, too?
Misty Dawn Day, she was never prosecuted.
The woman that set the whole thing up, Wilson.
There's nothing in the record that anything happened to her either.
Didn't prosecute her or gave her immunity?
Correct. She was not prosecuted. I don't believe there was any formal immunity agreement.
Now, these other three witnesses that put him at the scene, they weren't actually at the scene. It's just circumstantial
Correct.
Evidence that a week before looked like he was planning something like this.
Correct. And, as I say, the testimony from Misty Dawn Day was very specific. It wasn't that they were planning some home invasion robbery. It was that the defendant and Adams were planning the robbery of Mr. Garrett specifically. And that Sherry Wilson had a motive. She was very upset with Mr. Garrett.
I had the impression it didn't matter who was the shooter, but I think in your argument at trial, it did, and you were making Straub the shooter.
And I'm sorry.
Why?
I need to clarify. The portion of the record that Mr. Straub cites in his brief, in quoting the prosecutor's argument at closing, is ER 188. And, in fact, that's actually the prosecutor's rebuttal. If you actually look at the clerk's record of the trial transcript at page 1035, you will see that Mr. Hobb, who actually prosecuted this case, did, in fact, argue Pinkerton to the jury. He told the jury flat out, it doesn't matter if it was Adams or if it was the defendant who was the actual shooter. Under the Pinkerton theory, if you find that they were both there, if you find that they were there to rob Mr. Garrett and that Mr. Garrett was shot, that's all that it takes. So the government's argument was consistent with the jury instructions that Judge Panner gave.
If the jury had decided that Adams is just not a credible witness and disregarded everything he said, what did he have left?
We had circumstantial evidence. You know, we know Garrett was shot. Garrett testified. We know someone attempted to rob him. And then again, we've got the circumstantial evidence from the detective and Misty Donde.
But you argue in your brief that even if there were error in denying immunity to Bauman, it was harmless error. How could it be harmless error? Because Bauer's testimony could be used not only to impeach Adams' credibility, but also to prove that Straub did not carry or use a weapon at all.
Well, I think part of this goes back to context. And Judge Panner's ruling was that he didn't even get to, should I force the government to choose between immunity and acquittal? Judge Panner said this wasn't even relevant. And you need to keep in mind that the theory at trial for the defense was not that it was Adams. The theory at trial was an alibi defense. The defendant presented two witnesses who said that he was at his father's birthday party all night. So in terms of, it was harmless for that reason, because it didn't go to the defense, which was an alibi.
Well, it's certainly consistent with the alibi. If Strobe's at a birthday party, then, and Garrett got shot, and Adams testifies that he was there, then Adams must have been the shooter. Well, that seems perfectly consistent to me.
Or there was someone else. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that Adams was a shooter. We know that there was at least one other person there that was
right, but it wouldn't. But it's not inconsistent with the theory with the alibi theory that the defense is offering.
I wouldn't say it's inconsistent, but it's different. I mean, the defendant's position was, I don't know who shot him because I wasn't there. We also know from the entire trial record that Adams was subject to some pretty rigorous cross-examination. I'd liken this to the Confrontation Clause case that this court decided not too long ago, United States versus Larson, where when you have a mountain of evidence, you have the trial court instructing the jury to view this witness's testimony with heightened caution. You know that when Adams testifies, he himself is not subject to any immunity for any of the home invasion robberies or the witness tampering. And also, if you take a look at the defendant's closing argument to the jury, his central theme was, Adams is a liar. Adams is a liar. You can't believe him. Well, there was enough there for the jury to believe him. He was corroborated by Detective Hoskins and Misty Donde.
So without Adams, what you have is somewhat, at least one reliable witness. Well, somewhat, because the police, no, pretty reliable. Policeman overheard a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
That Straub was planning a home invasion robbery of a dope dealer a week before this robbery and shooting took place. And that's really it. Is that right?
Well, and then Misty Donde's overhearing of the planning of the robbery.
That's what I was talking about. You got the policeman and Misty Donde and,
right.
And somebody else, as I recall, saying a week before Straub was talking about how he was going to do a robbery of how he was going to rip off a dope dealer. And that's it. They don't mention this dope dealer, and there's nothing about shooting him. Just rip off some dope dealer in a week.
Well, a marijuana dealer and someone with about the same number of plants that Mr. Garrett actually had. So there was some additional factual consistency.
Some other woman there sets it up and says, this is
right.
How you doing.
Right. So David Adams was a very important witness. There's no question. David Adams testified to these home invasion style robberies without the benefit of immunity for any of the violent crimes. You know, David Adams admitted that he had been involved in so many home invasion style robberies that he'd hurt his knee. He could no longer kick in doors. You know, he was not an ideal witness, but I would submit that there was enough there, that he was a credible witness, at least for the points that formed the basis for counts 3 and 4.
He's got an occupational disability?
Exactly. Yeah, hard to submit a claim on that, but yes. Unless there are any further questions, I think Judge Panner appropriately handled what was a difficult situation that arose during the trial, and the conviction should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Pitzer, why didn't you ask for immunity before the trial started?
You know, that the record doesn't reveal why immunity wasn't requested prior to trial. I don't know when.
You were not trial counsel?
No. I don't know when trial counsel came into contact.
Do we have any idea that they didn't learn about Bauman's identity until the middle of the trial?
Right. No, well, there's nothing in the record that suggests that, but that could have happened. But he did.
But you don't know.
I don't know. But the fact is that Mr. Bauman would have directly contradicted Mr. Adams on a key point. And if the jury had believed that Adams was the shooter.
Contradict him. It suggests the possibility right. that Adams was the shooter.
And what I suggest, the reason that this is so prejudicial and resulted in a distortion of the fact-finding process is this additional testimony could have been the tipping point such that the jury discredited Adams altogether and maybe even concluded that Straub was not there. The only other evidence is testimony from Misty Gondé, who participated in a conversation where everybody was smoking marijuana 2 years earlier, and then this overheard conversation that Officer Hoskins heard. But the fact is, it would have been cost-free to give immunity to Mr. Bauman. He was not under investigation. He was not a co-conspirator. It would have been cost-free to let him testify and give the jury that evidence. And now Mr. Straub has to sit in prison for 10 extra years wondering what would have happened had Mr. Bauman testified. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. United States versus Straub is submitted.